This is a violent and often disturbing tale. You have been warned. Chapter 31. Savior. The machine had been designed well. Its arsenal was extensive and, as all had witnessed recently, brutally effective. John had not expected the grounds to be protected by such a force as this. He had some inside intelligence, but his source had clearly been unaware of the magnitude of the threat that Ethan Dorian had prepared for anyone who dared to invade his home. John was a seasoned specialist, a mercenary, hired to quietly and sometimes not so quietly put an end to problems for his employer. He had expected to face a challenge today, but nothing quite like this. The hind devoured the earth as its guns and rockets ripped men to shreds. The leader of Alpha Team watched as the massive gunship strafed the courtyard in front of the great mansion, spewing fire and ash from a library of armaments few other aircraft could match. His men were ill-equipped for this battle. All men would be.
"When this is over, I owe you a bullet between the eyes."
John spoke with cold certainty in his eyes. James turned his eyes and looked to the masked face of the man that had just threatened him. He hesitated only briefly, but then smiled.
"If we fail, you should save it for yourself. You know how the old man deals with that."
John kept his eyes fixed on him. There was an emptiness in that glare, unwavering, the way a man with nothing to lose answers the call of death. James, John, and the three soldiers knelt down beside a concrete water fountain. It was surrounded by a pond filled with water, contained by a short wall that rose almost 4 feet high. It had provided more resistance to the attack than any other place they had found. The edge of the structure formed a circle, perfect cover from the foe that moved above. The hind continued on its angled path as they followed the curved barrier in step.
"I have no intention of failing, Jimmy."
The masked figure lifted a radio, pressed a dark red button, and spoke with the accent that England generously gave to him.
"Beta team, come in."
A moment of silence followed, but then the radio buzzed, and a somber voice replied. The man's words were slow, as though restrained by an unease in the act of speaking. He had no accent, or seemed to have none. John could never tell for sure. Ian was the name he often used, but John was fairly sure it wasn't real.
"Beta team, confirm,"
Ian replied.
250 Charlie. I repeat, 250 Charlie, confirm,"
John answered, keeping a keen eye on the giant helicopter circling above.
"You are confirmed. Alpha leader, report."
The soldier responded abruptly.
"Well, in case you're blind, they've been hammering the fuck out of us. You must have not been watching, or else you'd know that, eh? That's fine. I understand. But I wouldn't hold it against you if sometime in the next minute or so you came to an epiphany while reflecting on the obstacles that life has given to a twat like you and decided against your inbred judgment to mark that bloody grasshopper with the infrared I gave you yesterday.
James smirked. He remembered why he liked John. After a brief pause, Ian's voice returned, seemingly unaffected by the vulgarity of his comrade's tone. Affirmative, Alpha Leader. Target is being acquired. John reached down and placed the radio back onto his belt. It snapped into a clip that rested there for this purpose. As the five men continued circling, they watched the moving menace, its blades chopping against the air's resistance with a repeating and resounding echo.
"Come on, Ian. Hit that bitch," John whispered to himself. "Come on."
Suddenly, the Hind began to accelerate. The engine screamed with a deafening protest as its blades dramatically hastened. The giant tried to bank to the left, in the direction of the mansion, as its pilot pulled back on the controls, forcing the aircraft up into the sky. But this was too little, too late. A flash of silver streaked across the horizon from a distant field, leaving a line of white smoke behind. The rocket struck the tail of the helicopter, ripping the back rotor into ragged pieces, with a clap that sounded and felt like a lightning bolt striking directly overhead. Several of John's soldiers had been engaged in a firefight with a large force of Dorian's men nearby. This sudden development silenced all of their guns instantly, as each of the men watched in disbelief, and the iron beast began to revolve in the air, spinning with a cyclone's wrath. The screech of the failing terror overcame all other noise, as black smoke plumed from its center, and the descent began. Ethan moved close to the glass. He could not believe what he was seeing. The Russian chopper had been annihilating all of the attacking forces. Their efforts paled to the threat that it posed and executed upon them. Yet now, this champion of technological warfare was mortally wounded, churning in an erratic circle, caught in the grip of chaos, and aimed directly here. Dorian ran and dove behind a thick mahogany table just as the iron carcass slammed down onto the roof of his great fortress. The blades blew apart the glass windows and ripped the wooden frame to pieces. They tore themselves apart as each slammed down into harder materials. It pushed down and forward as inertia carried the heavy load ahead. Then the Hind's frame bent and broke in half as gravity pulled it from the edge of the mansion back out into the air. Had the pilot lived to see this, he would have found the world tumbling end over end as the cockpit flipped and then crashed to the fine marble balcony and steps near the front doors. The helicopter, though utterly destroyed, did not explode, nor did the main engine immediately die. Instead, the frayed and dismembered blades on the main rotor sputtered and spun, digging, tearing into the ornately crafted facade of the mansion's front wall. John stared in satisfied amazement as the blades ripped apart the home structure, clawing desperately into it, fighting against the coming end. He wanted to laugh, started to, but then, the threat of fire that had been denied by the resilient engine was made real by the friction caused by its broken limbs.
"Oh, fuck," John heard himself say loudly. "Meredith," James whispered with obvious angst, as the flames began to grow.
George slammed against the ancient iron door. He felt the frame crack as he did. Emboldened by this, he took a step back and then rushed ahead once more. The door held, but he felt sure that it would not resist for long.
"Sir! We're here to secure Mr. Dorian. Where is he?"
The giant turned slowly to look behind him. Two soldiers were there, dressed in the same black uniform as he. Something in his eyes caused them to silence and even take a step back.
"I ordered all forces to engage. What are you doing here?" he demanded of them.
"Sir," one of the men began, "the commander said that... he said that we should make sure you were okay. He said you weren't answering the radio."
George lifted an eyebrow. The soldier swallowed a lump in his throat. He was about to explain the importance of following orders to these young men when suddenly the entire house jolted back and forth as though struck by the slipping of Earth's crust. Every light darkened instantly as each man was thrown to the floor with an unexpected collision. A few seconds passed, and then the emergency lights at the opposite end of the corridor illuminated. George shook off the blow and got to his feet. The others did as well.
"What happened?"
one of them asked. George hesitated, raised a finger, and listened. Dust, or perhaps smoke, had begun to cloud the air. The silence stretched on and on as the three waited in the shadows at the end of the white hallway. One of the young men started to speak again, but George raised his hand and grabbed the man's mouth with the palm of his monstrous grip. A second later, something crossed the light ahead. Something near the distant emergency beacons. George waited for a moment to see if the intruder may have seen them, but the figure did not return. He leaned towards the soldiers and whispered with a grave voice,
"Stay quiet and follow me."
Colt whimpered, whined, jaw quivering with terror. His friend, the man that had saved him, the one that his mother had chosen to guide her only son, had passed beyond this life. He fixed his eyes on the frozen face of Perry Long and exhaled a heavy cry of anguish. The dog had been bound to this man by something so deep that words cannot begin to account for. The grief he now felt wounded Colt more deeply than anything had since that terrible day so very long ago. Cindy embraced the dog as she too joined him in his sorrow. Though their friendship was still new, it felt more real than anything Cindy had known. Maybe she needed it to be. She cried for the loss of this man that they had struggled to save, tried beyond all reason to redeem, yet failed to pry from the grip of fate. She mourned for a man she did not know, and for the dog that loved him. Jason fell back, away from Perry's body, exhausted and defeated. He covered his face with his hands and exhaled the fullness of his frustration. Silence followed, broken only by the muffled agony of the German shepherd left behind. Colt lifted back his head and began to howl, the low and cheerless call reserved for the side of fallen masters. Neither Cindy nor Dr. Rodriguez made any attempt to interfere. If they could have, perhaps they would have joined him in this ancient ritual. But they at least respected it enough to let Colt have his voice. Colt howled in the empty sewer, sharing his pain with the darkness, the way his ancestors mourned those lost in ages past. The steel walls carried his voice to any that would hear, down the empty tunnels, across the rounded drains, ushering the soul of his friend forward to whatever lay beyond. Every emotion drained from his broken heart to form this final testament to all that Perry Long had given to him. There could be no greater sadness. But there was. Another voice answered his call. Colt opened his eyes, surprised to hear a howl to answer his, distant, faint, yet clear enough to draw his ear. He turned his head away from his friends towards the darkness and listened. The voice had seemed familiar, though he could not understand how. Cindy could tell that something had troubled the dog, but did not know why. She had not heard the other howl. She could not have, for it had been meant for his attention alone. She rubbed his ears, puzzled by his anxious focus towards the sewer behind them. A moment later, Colt suddenly came to his feet and began moving, cautiously at first, then rushing ahead with some strange new energy. She looked back to Dr. Rodriguez for a moment. He too was surprised by this, and so she nodded to him and then darted away after the dog. Moments of great stress can lead those of even the most fortified minds into vulnerable fragility. Sometimes an event can take down all of our mind's barriers and disturb the natural processes of reason within us. Cindy knew something of this. Bob suspected that Colt may have fallen victim to the same demons that he had fought to dispel. But it was not so. This was something quite different. Colt listened at Cindy's side for the howl and heard it come again. It was a noise he recalled with growing clarity. He would not let himself believe what he was hearing, could not, for it would not be possible. And yet, her voice, her call, could never be copied. Sure of what he had heard, Colt stepped forward. He knew it had come from somewhere ahead, but he could not know where exactly. When the cry came once more, it was louder, more defined, and hinted at a direction of origin. He did not hesitate. The dog darted ahead, across the wet floor, towards the sound of his mother's voice. David and Deborah huddled together in their frozen tomb. The drain offered them a final song to share in the last moments of their lives. It would not budge. And so, man and woman gave their energy to one another as warmth began to fade. David held the woman and smiled. He had no sadness in him, only regret.
Miss Renard.
Yes, Deborah answered through quivering lips.
How old are you?
She paused and thought on this for a moment, pondering his intent, but then answered honestly.
27.
The butler held her more tightly as his voice grew more defined than it had been.
You could be my daughter. I never had a chance to... Well, I suppose it wasn't meant to be. I haven't thought about it in a long time. Maybe I forced myself not to.
Deborah did not know what to say, and so she only listened. She pressed her head against his chest and let the vibration of David's voice soothe her final moments.
There never is enough time, is there? Never enough chances?
They held one another in the dark, silent, falling numb and cold in the gathered waters. The end was harsh and chilling, but at least it was coming quickly. Deborah shut her eyes. David did as well, and he shared the dark with her for some time, until the dark itself seemed to fade. Through his closed eyes, he thought for a moment that he had detected some sort of luminosity. David opened his eyes but saw nothing. Perhaps it was merely the beginning of the last of his brain's functions.
Everything will be fine, my dear. Everything will be fine.
David whispered to the woman in his arms and kissed her forehead the way he would have done so many times for the daughter he never had. A tear ran from one of his eyes. He knew he did not deserve this generosity. God owed him nothing. Yet he was grateful for the moment.
Thank you,
he whispered to himself. And the light came again. A faint orb of white seemed to fade in and out, bouncing slightly up and then down, clarifying as it grew. He smiled. Such a strange thing to see here at the end. It was a welcome change, even if it brought an end to all of this. To his surprise, though, he felt Deborah turn her head, and then he saw, dimly, the outline of her hair.
What the hell?
She muttered, and David understood that the light was in fact real. Before this could be considered further, the quiet of the tunnel was abruptly broken as a gunshot fired towards them. The wall to their left exploded with debris as a bullet impacted. David stumbled and fell backwards, down into the water. Deborah almost joined him, but caught herself at the last moment.
David!
She shouted. She heard the waters lapping from the waves his splash had made, but he did not answer. The moment lingered, dragged on for several seconds until, finally, she saw him. The distant light had brightened enough to reveal some detail in the room. It was a small, rounded chamber of earth and rock, only a few feet wide, but it was enough space for David to fall beyond her touch, or to hide a coiled chain beside the pool beneath them. The butler had seen it first, but Deborah found it with her eyes almost as quickly. He turned to look back at her, and they formed a wordless understanding. Something was coming, but not to save them. Every chance had seemed lost, but this new threat had revealed an unexpected gift, and perhaps a way to change the plans of fate. David reached into his coat pocket and retrieved his pistol.
"Cover your ears!"
he shouted to the woman, and began firing back into the shadows. He heard one of his shots strike a man, but this was answered instantly by the clap of machine guns.
"Get down!"
he shouted as Deborah dove into the water. Bullets screamed around them, pelting each with pebbles and dirt. David fired again and turned his attention to the woman.
Take hold of his chain. I'll take the other end. Go!
She needed no further prodding. Deborah grabbed the rusted links and pulled them away from the pile. She dragged the length of it around the edge of the submerged drain, staying low and close to the water. The attackers were not firing, perhaps evaluating the situation. She used the lull to focus her energy on the task at hand. Deborah felt David's resistance as the chain locked against the side of the iron circle.
Now, pull! He shouted.
David and Deborah used all of their remaining strength, strained with every force that life still retained, struggled at each end of the thick steel in their grips, pulled, screamed, and felt the hatch begin to move. The waters rushed down at their feet. They could feel the suction growing as the iron lid lessened its hold. Suddenly, the tide turned, and their strength overcame the grip of the gathered water. The steel disc jolted upright, locking at a vertical position, taking all of the room's waters down to whatever waited below. The force of this dropped David and Deborah to their knees behind the risen hatch, just as the unseen enemies opened fire once more. Ricochets clanged loudly as bullets screamed against the surface of the thick barrier. David grabbed Deborah's arm and pulled her behind the lid just as more bullets came. The noise of the guns had grown louder. The lights had brightened. There was little time left to consider any of this. The elder man looked into Deborah's eyes and was glad to have one last chance at sight. He stared at her for only a second, but it was a moment that he would cherish in the time that remained.
I have 5 shots left. You go down the drain. I'll cover you and meet you on the other side. Understand?
Deborah nodded quickly, only momentarily pausing at the thought of what waited below. Deborah breathed in several times, reached to David and took his hand in hers, and then nodded.
Good. We go on the count of 3.
She surprised him, saying,
Thank you, David.
Emotion overcame him for an instant. He could find no words, but then forced down his sentiment and nodded.
No, Deborah. Thank you.
She placed a hand on his face and smiled. Her palm was smooth and surprisingly warm. Against the aged texture of his skin, there could have been no greater gift. He wished that there had been time to linger this way for longer, but was glad in all that God had gifted here today. David felt a new strength come to him. He would need it for what remained.
1,
he muttered, pistol raised against his cheek. The boots of nearing soldiers could be heard. Deborah met his eyes.
2,
David said, and steeled his nerves. Radios echoed down the long tunnel. Guns rattled and clanked from running footsteps. Time seemed to draw in and share with David a longer moment than was possible. He could see Deborah's face clearly now and wanted to smile, wanted to show her how much this chance meant to him, tell her that he was not the one that had saved her, but that she had saved him.
3!
Deborah jumped to her feet and spun around the edge of the iron lid. David was upright instantly, took aim at one of the lights, and fired, screaming as he did so. She looked down at the circular hole in the floor. There was a steel pipe that descended down into formless darkness. The thought of that was too much, so she let go of it, grabbed the hole's edge, and pushed herself into the underworld. In a single moment, she was gone. David leaned against the back of the raised lid, taking cover from a new volley of coming projectiles. He could hear men shouting and loading weapons. He shut his eyes and recalled the face of the woman and shared his smile with the memory. There was nothing left to consider. He knew what God demanded of him. He understood the trade that had been made and was glad to have had the honor. Summoning a final surge of power, David pushed his weight and strength against the raised iron disc. It protested his effort for a moment, and so David forced every breath he had into this last effort. The hatch groaned, the hinge splintered, and then the iron lid jolted as it smacked down onto the edge of the pipe beneath it. This time, it met the seal and locked down firmly. David sighed. They would not be able to pursue her now. With rage spilling from his lungs, David lifted himself up and fired the last of his ammunition, shouting and screaming towards a coming army, victorious in the sacrifice he had made. Colt heard the call of his lost mother once more and hastened his footsteps. He rounded a corner and rushed forward. Cindy trailed several feet behind. The dog was so fast. She had not expected him to be able to run so quickly. The girl lost sight of him and felt a panic grow in her heart, but then, an instant later, saw Colt as he darted down a new passage. He came to the end of the tunnel, where he had heard his mother's howl, but it was empty. She could not be found. Only gray walls and a damp floor lay waiting. He turned left and then right, searching the chamber, barking, listening for an answer, but none came. Cindy stopped at the entrance to the tunnel, at the chamber's entryway, and caught her breath. She could not understand why he had done this, but knew that his loss must have been the cause. Colt turned to Cindy and whimpered. He seemed confused. She felt a tear begin to form and took a step towards him. But before she could reach the dog, a rush of water suddenly spilled down a long tube at the wall beside him. Colt jumped back, away from the icy blast of liquid. He stared into the angled tunnel, anxious and perplexed. A series of low noises echoed from somewhere far away, resounded with some strange intensity, like a hammer striking against an iron plate. The dog was troubled by this and growled, but then his mood shifted as he caught some familiar scent. He barked and began to wag his tail vigorously. Cindy could not know or understand why this was happening, but as she struggled to comprehend, the drain echoed again, and a new noise emerged. It sounded like something large had been forced down, clanging against the sides of the pipe as it fell. And then the voice. "David!" Deborah rushed down the tube, her body beating against the hard opposition of its cold edges. She screamed for the man that had saved her, but knew that it was too late. After only seconds, she felt herself break free from the confines of the drain and splash down hard against a concrete floor. She groaned at the pain of the impact, but was glad to feel again. To her surprise, Colt licked her face.
"My God, Colt!"
Deborah shouted. She reached out and took the dog in her arms. He moaned and licked her again as his tail wagged back and forth.
"What are you doing here? How did you..."
Deborah started to ask, but something caught her eye. She turned to see a young woman standing at the entrance to the room. Her face had been disfigured. This caught Deborah's attention instantly, but it was the eyes that held her. Cindy's stare was beyond description. Mesmerized, overwhelmed, captivated. Bob screamed in shock at the sight of the woman. Cindy wanted to as well, but could find no words or voice, even if she would allow it. She could not believe what she was seeing. How could this be real? How could this happen? Reality and fantasy had been difficult for her to separate before, but this was beyond anything that had ever come before. Cindy stared, wide-eyed, motionless, into the face of a woman that had visited her before. The many years of harsh and icy nights had taken a toll upon the girl, but the dreams had sustained her. She had seen this woman's face again and again, knew it so well that she had drawn it on every surface that she could find. Today, Cindy had seen everything change for her in ways she could not understand. The impossible had come to be. But this was beyond anything that had ever been allowed the faintest of hopes.
"The angel,"
Bob whispered in Cindy's thoughts. Cindy began to cry.
"The angel."
In a room not far away, a scientist held his face in his hands and strained to accept the victory of Ethan Dorian. His efforts had failed. Every evil would go unpunished. Hope was at last abandoned. The room fell silent as he tried to consider what he would do next. But Jason could find no resolution. The struggle and sacrifice he had endured would find no resolve. No answers came. Jason felt his strength draining away as despair took a firmer hold. But God was not finished with his work today. Perry Long opened his eyes. This has been Ethan Eternal, Chapter 31, Savior. For more information, please visit onemanasylum.com.